This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
She does it with a foul shot. Caitlin Clark becomes the all-time leading scorer in major college basketball history.
A couple of weeks ago, I walked into a hardware store on a Saturday late morning, as you do on the weekend, and there was a young woman working there who had her laptop open and she was waiting in anticipation to watch a women's college basketball game in the United States. But that's not as random as you would think, because that young hardware worker was one of the 12.3 million people worldwide who were dialed in to watch Caitlin Clark. She has pretty much taken college women's basketball to new heights. She's created record-setting TV ratings, and this is all based on her being one of the most incredible and prolific scorers in the sport's history. Her draft to the WNBA was one of the most anticipated. She now has a shoe deal that's worth around $30 million and her own signature shoe. But her annual wage, now that she's drafted, will only be around $80,000 and lower than her male counterparts. So will we see the Caitlin Clark effect? And like the Matildas, will we have the Caitlin Clark effect on basketball here in Victoria? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your very basketball-y co-host this morning. Mr. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. Nick, love, hate, interested, not interested in basketball. I've watched some of the footage because I have a very basketball-y house. This young woman is incredible and she just looks like a normal woman. I know that sounds ridiculous, right? But she doesn't look uber athletic. The three-pointers that she shoots, the hype that she's creating around young women who play basketball that I know is incredible. I just wonder how much of that is going to translate to our local basketball scene.
I hope a lot. I mean, the hype is beyond anything I've ever seen. I don't follow basketball. It's not that I'm not interested. Bluntly, I just don't understand it. Everything's too fast-paced for me. I get very confused trying to watch it. But even I just heard that name over and over and over again, to the point where I initially thought she had to have been Aussie, and that's why we were talking about her, not just that she was going to be one of the world greats. I love how inspiring she's been. I saw the huge outrage when we initially saw how much she was going to get paid compared to male counterparts, and some very rightful outrage given her skill set and given the level she's playing at. I really hope it does translate. I want to see more of that. On a certain level, in the terms of on the grassroots level, when I speak to people, they say that any high-profile women's sport or women's athlete raises a lot of all women's sports. You see more and more young girls saying, I want to do that, I want to play that, I can be that person. That is fantastic. I think we're going to see a huge boost.
Well, I know my daughter already is so excited that she may have her own signature shoe. She's like, can I wear a Caitlin Clark shoe? I mean, how great would that be
as
well?
Can you get
a
second mortgage for this Caitlin Clark shoe, I assume?
Exactly, as given the rate the kids grow out of things. But it's interesting because basketball is labelled the everybody's game, right? That it's accessible, it's affordable, it's a game that anyone and everyone can play. And it actually has incredible numbers when we look at wheelchair basketball as well and accessibility. I just wonder how healthy local basketball courts are. Do they get the support, the funding, the recognition of local, the same as local footy and netball clubs? But then the other thing is, Nick, if you show promise and if you want to play professionally,
yeah,
as a woman or maybe as a man as well, how simple is it to play professionally? What are the pathways for basketball in terms of professionalism? Can you do that in Australia? Do you have to go and get a sponsorship to, you know, go to a university in the United States and play college basketball? Can you play locally? You know, what are the opportunities here?
Look, not to get into a weird history lesson, but in the land before time, back in the 1980s when I was in high school, I played basketball because it was where you washed up to if you could play no other sport. If you were so bad at sport the way I was, you ended up in the basketball team because no one cared and no one was watching and no one really minded whether you showed up or not. Oh, it was, seriously, I ended up... true story, so bad at sport that after I was so bad at basketball, they eventually just let me walk the cross-country course while reading my book and leave everyone alone. I've never been happier in my entire life. But that's what it was like. And to watch basketball as a sport grow, we have a very grassroots campaign happening in Shepparton right now to improve our sports stadium because there's been a big influx of people who want to play basketball and a lot of concern that the sports stadium here is not ready for that. Four courts, they leak, you know, there's been some huge dramas around it. We want to know that we, and this would be echoed in many, many towns right around regional Victoria, we want to know that if people want to play, if they think there's a pathway to being, you know, on a higher level, they've got the facilities, they've got the stadium, they've got the courts to get out there and make a difference. And you're right, it may not need to be, if you're having a pickup game, an expensive sport, it can be a very low-cost one. You know, you see lots of courts are just out in the open, but you need the acknowledgement that if we want to take it to that next level, it requires investment and care.
And how do you do that? I know basketball's taken very seriously. In Bendigo, it was taken very seriously. In the Latrobe Valley growing up, you know, basketball weekends, if you had nothing to do, even if you didn't play, you just went to the local stadium and you watched.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a thing. It might have had something to do with the boy that you liked at the time and whether or not they were playing, but it was a thing. You'd say, do you want to hang out at the rec centre? And so you'd go and hang out at the rec centre. Basketball was a thing. I'm pretty sure it still is. But is there a pathway, not just for women, but for all to be able to play basketball professionally here in Australia? What are the opportunities like, whether it be to play or maybe even behind the scenes from coaching, mentoring and managing? How simple is it to make basketball your career in Australia? And will Caitlin Clark give basketball the Matilda's effect?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour.
Here's Clark. A deep one. You bet! Caitlin Clark! Absolutely ridiculous!
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you as we discuss the Caitlin Clark effect. This text already, what, 30 million is not enough, says this. Basketball, Coca-Cola, you name it, McDonald's, they're all dreadful American imports. And that's, I mean, I don't think, but you can put basketball into the same category as fast food. But that 30 million isn't what she's getting paid from basketball. That's from a sponsor.
Exactly. And that's what I mean when we say, you know, she shouldn't have to see that money coming from an external source based on advertising. It should be, in my view, if she's going to be a professional sports person, she should be paid as a professional sports person, not so significantly lower than male counterparts.
This text saying, the good old rec centre on Old Sale Road. Hey, Rochelle, I think it might have been.
Are the boys still hot? That's what we need to know. Are the boys still worth watching when they're playing? That's what Rochelle needs to know.
And their tuck shop was really good too. All right. And there was a pool associated. You go have a swim, then you go watch the boys play basketball. It was the perfect weekend. Christy Harrower is a former Australian Opal, but she's also currently a coach with Keilor Thunder in the WNBL 1. Christy, I mean, you're a former professional player. How simple is the pathway here in Victoria and in Australia to be able to play basketball professionally?
It's not as easy as what people think. It is. Thanks for having me. And I listened to that introduction of Caitlin Clark, and it's amazing what she's doing for women's basketball, but also women in sport. But, you know, for me, when I was growing up, I was a born and bred Bendigo girl. And pretty much my mum owned the canteen up there and my dad was a coach. So that's how I got involved. But for me to get the competition I needed back in those days, I had to drive to Melbourne every Friday night. There was no highways back then, so you went through every country town and I played with Melbourne Tigers on a Friday night. And I left home at the age of 16 to go to the Institute of Sport and then played WNBL for a while. And back in those days, there wasn't as much money. And when I'm talking back in those days, I'm talking like, mid-90s to late 90s. Even when I came back, I played 8 years overseas professionally in Europe and in the WNBA, and there's a lot more money to be made over in Europe, even a lot more money for WNBA players today to go to Europe and earn more money.
Wow.
So, and then when I finished overseas, I came back here and played with the Bendigo Spirit in the WNBL. And look, I was earning enough that I didn't have to work, but it's still nothing compared to what the men earn. So, I mean, the WNBA, I played my second year, my first year, which was the second year the league started, I was on $15,000 for the season.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and then the next year it went up to, they had a collective bargaining agreement come in and it went up to 30,000. So, and that was like as a, pretty much as a minimum type player at that time. So, I know the max contract in a WNBA today is $240,000. So it's a massive difference to the men. And I think the only way that I can explain it is in the WNBA, it's the best league in the world, the most prestige league. But I think the way it works is a lot of the WNBA has control of how much money is spent, because in the NBA, they have a lot of private owners. So they have, and they have massive TV rights. They get a lot from that sort of stuff, where I think we're only just getting to that stage in the WNBA now. And then when you have people like Caitlin Clark and them come through, it makes a big difference to the league.
Christy, I really want to talk more about what sort of Caitlin Clark is doing, not only for this sport, but all women's sport. Just very quickly, though, Jenny's called in from Hawthorne East. Jenny, good morning.
Good morning.
Jenny, what do you want to say?
I just feel that there's a really strong interest and excitement for basketball in kids, particularly in the area that I live in. All the kids at primary school are playing, boys and girls. Everyone, my 14-year-old son's been in the same team since grade two and has just started coaching. Our 14-year-old friend, who is a girl, is also coaching as well. They play for the Titans in the Hawthorne area, and they're a fantastic, encouraging club that gives them all the support they need and gives them pathways if they're, not going to end up in the NBA like they thought they were.
That's something, Jenny, that I've really noticed over the years, actually, is that even if you're not playing, or if you're right, if you love basketball, you play it, maybe you're good at it or not, but you just play it because you love it, you're never going to be a professional. There's so many other things you can do. A lot of the umpires are young and learning. There is this, and the last time I spoke basketball, I got this real sense of community and family, and ensuring that whoever wants to get involved can somehow get involved on a meaningful level.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of young refs as well, and the sense of community is definitely there. I'm the team manager for two teams as well.
Oh, wow. So it's, that's a lot of work.
Oh, it's emails, admin. But the thing is that it's getting kids, they've got a really good, healthy mindset, and it's about being, having healthy attitudes as well, and having boys and girls all doing the same kind of activities, I think is really important as a mum of two boys.
Good to hear from you, Jenny. Thank you. Christy Harrower is with you as well as we talk basketball. She's a former Australian Opal, currently the coach of the Keilor Thunder at the WNBL 1. You spoke about the impact that Caitlin Clark is having, and Nick and I have been chatting about this. Is she really having an actual impact, a grassroots impact, do you think? Are people talking about her? Will you see it unfold in any meaningful way?
She is. I think the way they talk about her in America is that she's a generational player. Nobody has seen anything like it. The way that a lot of people watch NBA, and if they watch Steph Curry shoot his threes, she does a little bit the same. The biggest thing I think people are now interested in is how she's going to go when she gets to the pros. So it's a big step from playing against, I call them kids because they're quite young, anywhere between 18 to 22, and then going to play against players that are legit pros, legit superstars. So that'll be interesting to see how she makes that adjustment at that next level, because for anybody, that's a big jump.
this is what's fascinating to me, is that normally we hear this sort of buzz about a US athlete when they are at the peak of their game. You know, as you point out, and it's something you can get lost in this, we're still talking about someone playing at the college level.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But this is what it's like in America. They college is such a massive following. Like, it's huge because a lot of the people that follow college are like, I think it's bigger than some of the pro sports because they're in their own little state. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's
probably
in that state.
So have we ever seen Nike throw around the sort of money that they are, or any other big sports brand? I mean, 30 mil she's already been given. Have we ever seen anything like that?
Only on the men's side, definitely only on the men's side. This is the first for women that I've ever seen. Like, I mean, you had people like Breanna Stewart come out, win 4 national championships in college with UConn, Sue Bird that is big time in America, and I've never seen anything like that, like the money that she's earning over the next 8 years.
Do Australians want to go on and play college basketball? So is a pathway to get into a university in the States and play college?
A lot of Australians do it. A lot of Australians do it. I think the ones that, like, I mean, I got offered to go to UCLA back in my time, but I decided I didn't want to go because I wanted to try and make the 96 Olympic team. So I think if you're on the cusp of nearly making the Australian team, you might not go. You might just go and play WNBL straight away and play against experienced older players so you can get that improvement straight away. But players that maybe are on the, you know, at the end of the bench or are not there yet, they might go on to college and play. But it's such a great way to go now because the WNBA is so big and these players, if they play well in college and they're playing at a big-time school, you could get drafted. And we had three or four girls from Australia get drafted this year. But 2 are playing here in Australia. Like, they haven't gone the college path. Mm. So 2 have been drafted from here.
So, Christy, if the sport here is so big, what are you anticipating from a Caitlin Clark effect when it comes to basketball in Australia?
Mm. Well, you'd hope it to be the same as what the effect that people like LeBron and Steph Curry have on the kids here in Australia, right? So the only thing, like, we have basketball is such a huge participating sport at the young age. The only thing is when kids get to, especially for girls, when they get to under 18s, they don't go on. Like, there's nothing after under 18s unless they go to youth league or NBL 1. There's nothing for the girls. So where with boys, they can continue to play and they be more active. Life changes a lot for the girls, but the only problem here in Australia is there's not enough courts. There's not enough courts to go around for the associations because it's a huge participating sport. But I think for Caitlin, if she can have, if Steph Curry and LeBron and all have that effect on people around the world, I think she would do the same.
This is a text from Gail, and I just want to end with this, Christy, and it says, Christy came to speak to our school years ago. I still recall her story of the male players travelling at the front of the plane while the female players were back in economy on the same plane.
Yep.
Mm.
That happened my whole Opals career. So I was with the Opals for 20 years and honestly, I went to 4 Olympics, 4 World Championships and we won gold in 2006 at the World Cup. We never got business class. The men did. And the only time that we saw change was in 2010. We got upgraded to a premium economy and we were wrapped. We were wrapped.
Is it still the case, Christy?
No, I don't think it is now. Oh, but I think we set that. We worked hard to get that. And then as new coaches came in, it completely changed. So I think the girls get – well, I know they had to go to Brazil for pre-Olympics qualifications. And I think they were only in premium economy. They weren't in business class. So, yeah.
We'll just leave that one there, shall we?
I think sometimes they do travel business class now, though. So it has changed a little bit. But, it's there's still a long way to go.
Chrissy, thank you. We could talk to you all day. It's fascinating. And we really do hope that Caitlin Clark brings some change here. If nothing else, it gets the courts built that local and regional areas need and it ensures that women get to sit up the front as well if they're playing professionally. Chrissy Harrower, thank you so much. Former Australian Opal. She's currently a coach at the Keilor Thunder WNBL1. Nick, just a little update on the rec centre at the Latrobe Valley, which is in Newborough.
I've been on bated breath.
It's up in Newborough, so people are keeping me updated. Rish, don't forget, when you got bored of the basketball, you could run around and you could go up to the squash courts up on the second level. Totally forgot about the squash courts. They were great. And Pete says, Rish, I ran the track at the rec centre, so there used to be an athletic track that would be around the outside of the rec centre. But Pete says there's massive potholes. It's certainly no longer an accredited track. Eastern parts of East Melbourne are screaming for good athletic tracks and field, and Traralgon would be the ideal location. That's from Pete. So what impact will Caitlin Clark have on local basketball? And if you want to go professional here, then what is the pathway?
It's basketball, bow wow, let's go. Let's go.
Oh. You're on the Conversation Hour. Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy joining you. I'm in Melbourne. Nick joins you from ABC Shepparton as we talk about the Caitlin Clark effect on local basketball. She's a college basketballer. She's just been drafted. It's her first year of going professional. Yet the hype that she is already creating. You do hope, though, Nick, that it does create real change. After listening to Chrissy, there's been some baby steps made. But change is needed. So when we talk about, oh, well, it can't be all hype around one person, blah, blah, blah. Yes and no. When you look at the impact that the Matildas have had for women's football and for women's soccer, then the change is real. You know, if you're fighting for change rooms, if you're fighting for equality, if you're fighting for pay, then it helps, I think.
Oh, it helps so much. And it's incredibly important because otherwise you end up dissolving into some chicken or egg problem about, well, yeah, young girls don't want to play, so therefore we don't need the change rooms. But we don't have the change rooms, therefore it's not easy for these people to come and play. And at some point, something has to give. I just want to quickly dive back into the world of business class versus economy seating in the division there. I think there's a little bit of missing the point on the text line of people saying, you know, I always sit up the back, it's safest. It's not about it's the gendered division that is the clear problem here. Although I did like this text saying, as a professional scientist, I've never been able to fly anything but economy. Why should sport be any different? Different argument. But it should be consistent.
The reason why, you're in business is so you can hit the ground running and do business, right? You've been able to sleep. You've been able to rest. You get there and you don't feel like you're on another planet. So if you're a professional sports person, you would hope that the reason why you're up the fancy end of the plane is because you can then perform. And do your job.
And it makes sense to me that way, assuming scientists need to perform as well. But, the point is I would want to see consistency around that, 100%. Not gender divisions. That's all it comes down to.
Gary's in Sunbury. Hi, Gary.
G'day. How are you?
Really well. What's it like where you are, basketball?
It's exploding. We have that many players that we haven't really got any more than 45 minutes to train any one team during the whole week, so can't really handle the explosion of the young boys and girls coming into the club system. But just I'm more concerned about with children playing basketball whether we've got the funding in that, which we know money is fairly tight, as far as the coaching, like the Chrissy Harrows and all that sort of thing coming through. It's very minimal in the way that the funding comes through to the government, and keeping the kids off the streets. You know, it's a fantastic community that we're trying to create, but it's all by charity. Yeah. We can only do so much and raise so much money for...
Yeah, you can only have so many meat ruffles, can't you?
Gary, it's all community by the sounds of it, but you're seeing that real impact. You're seeing huge amounts of people coming in looking for something more to do.
Yeah, exactly, and we want to keep them off the streets because we have this terrible problem, and so it's a long-term investment, and we just haven't got the courts. Like, you've got six courts for 30,000 people.
How many?
And imagine that.
Six?
Well, that's what the population is going to be in Sunbury in the next couple of years. And those courts are shared with netball. We all want the kids to play sport, and we all want to create the community that those kids then go on and create friends for the rest of their life. But
Gary, you raised such an interesting point around, so Sunbury has grown as a suburb, right, and as a region, right. And then the sporting facilities don't keep up with that. So when we build more housing estates, there should be some kind of prerequisite that you need to include sporting facilities to be able to have some kind of ratio that is, you know, for numbers of people that live in the area and sporting facilities, and it always feels like sporting facilities just come last, if not at all, when we build new suburbs or when suburbs expand.
And not just suburbs, when we're seeing changes to regional populations as well. You know, we know there's been a huge population explosion, a lot of regional centres, not even just regional cities, but some of the smaller communities as well. But of course, that infrastructure means it's been pressed. And often when we talk about that, we're talking healthcare, we're talking transport, sporting facilities, massive part of that.
Absolutely. And the research is there to show you that, you know, exactly as Gary was saying, you feel connected, you feel a part of a community, you've got something to do, you find your tribe, and it doesn't always mean playing. You know, there are other roles and things that you can do. Dr. Hunter Fujak is a senior lecturer in sports management at Deakin University. Hunter, when you sort of throw your research lens over Caitlin Clark and local basketball, in particular local women's basketball, are we going forwards or going backwards?
Hi, thanks for having me. The answer is both. So, you know, typical academic answer. So the points your previous guests were making were absolutely correct. You know, the big challenge is at the community level where basketball, along with football, are really exploding in popularity, and there's just fundamentally not enough infrastructure, perhaps more so in the metropolitan cities where land is particularly scarce, to actually play all these sports at the community level. So that's really one of the big, big challenges, is actually meeting the demand of basketball for both genders. At the sort of commercial, professional level, perhaps it's a slightly different story where we're not really seeing the progress one might hope.
What progress would you be hoping for? What should we be seeing on that professional level, Hunter?
Well, I think it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, Australia is a really competitive sport market. We watch and consume so much sport. Obviously, we're the only place in the world with four discrete football codes. And with the much needed development of women's sport, we've now gone from not only having, you know, men's competitions across lots of sports, but now also having women's. So whereas when the WNBL was launched in, you know, 1981, 82, they were still competing with, you know, rugby league, AFL, cricket. Mm. Now they're competing doubly because there's now an NRLW, AFLW. So there's just so much competition for eyeballs and sponsors and fans that it's just a really tough market to try and grow for all our sports, which is why we're seeing netball and rugby union in particular really sort of struggle as the market evolves.
It's interesting, there's a text here says, this is all nice, but women don't buy tickets to watch women's basketball. The stands at the women's NBA are empty. Women's sport will never be funded or paid appropriately until women start paying to watch it like they do the men's. And women, mind you, says this text. Buy tickets for the club and club memberships and watch. How much of this is true? You know, do we need to buy the tickets? I mean, when we look at the Matildas effect, we started to see stadiums of women's soccer sell out, right? So the fans called it. The fans were in control. Does some of it fall back onto us?
Well, ultimately, these are, you know, professional leagues trying to make revenue. And so it does ultimately fall back on people and their wallets and their hearts and their minds. And so, you know, I think the big mistake we've all made and our sport leagues have made is sort of trying to pigeonhole themselves as being, you know, a women's sport for women or a man's sport for men. You know, there has always been women who've gone to rugby league and AFL matches and cricket, and there have always been men who've gone to netball or women's basketball. And so to really be successful, we need to move away from thinking about our leagues as these gendered products that only serve half the community. And the great success of the Matildas is now when you speak to little kids, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, you know, there are little boys who want to emulate being Sam Kerr. We're basically deconstructing these gender boundaries, which artificially limit all the codes.
Hunter, just on that topic, AFLW kind of linked their women's side into already existing teams and notable supporter bases. Do you think that's been a contributing factor for that popularity?
Yeah, and this is a really interesting division, right? Because, you know, your AFL, NRL and BBL have all kind of had linked franchises that link the men's and the women's under the same brand. And that's broadly, I would describe, as successful, because if you're already a Dragons fan or if you're already a Collingwood fan, it stands to reason that you should then transfer your support to the women's club.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one weakness of the WNBL, is not necessarily being as connected to the NBL. And now the NBL is flying in relative terms. It's hitting this halo period, and maybe the WNBL is not kind of benefiting from that halo as much as they would if they were more aligned.
Hunter, stay with us. Clark's called in from Beaumaris. Hi, Clark.
Morning. Look, I've had three kids go through, and I'm also a local counsellor. And over my 20-year journey, I have just seen the age of participation in formalised competitive sport get lower and lower and lower. And then at the other end, the pathway into, or the dream, if you like, into professional sport get lower at those teenage years, and thus creating a really hollowing out of the local community clubs. But really importantly to the women's sport and to the issue of access is, you know, I see kind of 5 and 6 year olds occupying fairly contested space on basketball, netball and football grounds. But really at that age, they should be developing just generic skills rather than, you know, playing really heavy.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I wonder what sort of debate that would create. Clark, one thing that has come up, we cover sport a lot on this program, and one thing that has come up is this idea now that, especially when you're young, you only play a sport if you're really good at it. And if you're not good at it, then why bother? Drop out. So when I was growing up, you could be crap at something and play it, and that was totally fine, right? And you played it badly week in, week out. But that idea now that unless you're going to potentially become professional or unless you're really good, then, Clark, why bother, right? There's just a change in attitude to sport. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You can just look at what happened in the mini leagues over in the US. As soon as they realised that they could emotionally capture the parents to say, look, if you don't register in this representative league, you're letting your child down for a chance of playing in the big leagues, their community participation dropped down 60-70%. You can read about this stuff, the hollowing out of community sport. And I see it in my local LGA. I'm just shocked. Like, we used to have four, you know, really good under-17 showcase kind of end of your junior's years. And that's down to, like, they can only get 3 or 4 clubs participating now because everyone's in.
Gosh, in and it all fractures, doesn't it? It becomes,
yeah.
Oh, there's so many, so many points in that, Clark.
Clark, thank you very much for that. I thought that was really, really interesting. And just a text that came through saying, why do we think that every sport is going to end up being a professional occupation? From a commercial point of view, it's about what income can be generated to pay players. This text is saying, we've got our eyeballs watching AFL versus basketball or netball. And back to Hunter, just a really interesting one. Are we ready, I guess, around the country for a Caitlin Clark effect should one arrive? Have we got our ducks in a row to be ready to take advantage of it?
Gosh, probably not, to be honest. And I think we need to temper our expectations on the Caitlin Clark effect. You know, I was listening to the prior conversation and, you know, she's going to migrate into the WNBA. You know, her last final in the NCAA drew nearly 19 million viewers in America, whereas the grand final of the WNBA got 880,000 viewers, right? So she's migrating into a league that itself is hoping for a Caitlin Clark effect, because, you know, she is essentially their Sam Kerr in basketball in America. So, you know, we're a few degrees removed. I'm skeptical that she will move the needle particularly much here. And again, part of that is because, you know, people here don't really follow the WNBA either, because similar to the WNBL, they don't align to the men's clubs. So historically, people haven't followed the WNBA anywhere near the same levels of the NBA. So I think locally, we should temper our expectations as to the effect it'll have, at least at the commercial professional level.
It's fascinating. Hunter, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Hunter Fujak there is a senior lecturer in sport management at Deakin University. This is an interesting text. It says, well, I think most of our professional sports people come out of private schools. So when we look at, okay, college basketball in the United States, where our, and, you know, if you go to a particular school in the United States in order to play a particular sport, to play basketball, that's happening to a certain degree here in Australia. That model is being emulated here. You are seeing kids getting sponsorships for schools in order to play sport, in particular AFL. It happens in cricket too. So we are sort of creating this Americanized style of you go to a school and you get a sponsorship for a school, but to play that sport that that school wants to be known for.
I've always found that model really fascinating in the US. I've never been quite sure how I feel about it to a large degree, because I'm sure that it is very beneficial for some people, but I think it also catches some of the other players on the flat foot and puts them in an environment that is not actually great for their development. Really curious to see if there's actually been any long-term studies done around the impact of it, to be honest.
And strangely, there's a secondary debate happening on our text line around who and why people should sit in first class on aeroplanes.
I mean,
this is something that we will probably never experience, Nick, unless there is a mistake made and we are put into the pointy end.
I've been bumped up to business once.
Was it a life-changing experience?
It was. What you're not ready for is just how different they are. Like, you're just not ready to walk up. Like, they're like, oh, no, you can move up to business now. And you squeeze your knees out and, you know, you get across the five people who are beside you. And then you walk up to a massage bed where they bring around a cheese platter at the end of the meal. And you're like, this is ridiculous.
I just have this image of Elaine on Seinfeld trying to sneak into first class and stealing a cookie and then being shoved back into cattle class and saying to people, do you know these people are getting cookies up there? That's all I think about. We digress. We are talking women's basketball in Victoria. Will we see the Caitlin Clark impact? Will we see the Caitlin Clark effect here locally? What do you think?
Radio Melbourne and Victoria. This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt in Melbourne. Nick Healy, your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Shepparton as we talk about women's basketball in Victoria. Will we see the impacts of the hype around Caitlin Clark, a college basketballer in the United States? First year of going professional, and yet this is what we're talking about. How fascinating to discover, Nick, that this is the first time that we've seen Uber dollars from sponsors being thrown to someone that hasn't even played one game of professional basketball yet.
The whole thing has been fascinating to me because I've not quite ever got a handle on how that college system works in the US, and to see how essential it is, to see what kind of money is behind it, but also how many people are watching compared to other levels, just mind-blowing to me.
The impacts for regional Victoria, I mean, we heard earlier from a professional basketballer, a former Opals, talking about, well, when you're growing up, and especially if you lived in the regs, you would have to travel a really long way in order to be able to play in that pathway to making it professionally. But also just the importance of being able to have a local basketball court to be able to play badly. All right, well, not going to be like Christy. Some of us are just going to play average, and the importance of being able to have that accessibility. Megan Keating is the president of the Rochester Basketball Association. And Megan, basketball, so important to the regs, but for Rochester in particular, you saw the floods come through there not so long ago. How did the courts fare out of that particular disaster that you went through?
Thanks, Rochelle, for having us on today. And like the rest of our town, the 1,000-odd houses that were flooded, so was our basketball stadium that's located at our Rochester Secondary College.
Is it back up and running yet, Megan? I mean, I know. Speaking to people in Rochi, it would be a rarity if it was.
No. It's back up and running, and that's full credit to the Department of Education and our principal at the time of the Rochester Secondary College, Melissa Gould. They really put the effort into get the stadium up and running. I've never seen so many dryers in one hall in my life. They removed a couple of flat each side and had dryers going 24/7 for a good couple of months. So in that, we were able to get back into the stadium term two, 2023, which was amazing for our students to, you know, especially our kids, to actually have some normality with sport as well, that they could, you know, ride their bike to basketball and play a game. They don't have to be superstars. You know, we may not have the next Caitlin, but we have we have people that are so important to sport in general, and it, you know, it plays such a part in the mental health scenario of giving people's, you know, way of exercising, a way of ensuring there's no social isolation and being part of a team. You can never underestimate.
Megan, how big is basketball in Rochi compared to other sports?
Well, we're very much a sporting town, let's be honest. Yeah. So, you know, our football netball club does an amazing job and was the AFL Community Club of the Year last year. We have tennis, we have bowls. Our bowling green is, they do an amazing job over there. They host tournaments and different things. And basketball's part of that staple sport. And one of the things that we have to do from a grassroots perspective is we try and fit in with the other sports. We know we don't want to go against footy training because we'll lose a heap of boys and now girls to footy. And we work with the other sports to make sure that not only the other sports, but we also try to make sure that if we've got kids that want to go to Echuca or to Bendigo to further their basketball, that we're not competing on the same night so those kids can still play with their schoolmates.
And that's the incredible thing. I mean, Bendigo is so well known for, I guess, the level that they put into their basketball and how seriously it's taken and the opportunities that come out of Bendigo, and geographically you're sort of not too far from there. What's the numbers like in terms of women playing basketball in Rochi? And do you see them drop out once they sort of hit 17, 18, or do they continue on playing into adulthood?
Well, interesting question at the moment. Our niche is junior sport, there's no doubt, into sort of that early secondary college age. But what we've found we ran our first domestic senior comp in term four last year. So we found a lot of netballers wanting to use it as a pre-season. And we found some past netballers that went, you know what, I don't need to be assigned to a football netball club anymore. I can play a recreational sport here in my own hometown and play. So 38% of our basketballers in our senior competition last year were women, which is higher than the average. And we didn't even think we'd get a senior domestic up for term 2 to 3 this year. But as of a message this morning, it looks like we're going to have a women's domestic comp for, you know, 15, 16-year-olds up to maybe 50-year-olds, maybe a bit older.
Fantastic.
Wow.
In the coming weeks. So that's, you know, we're really excited by that. And I think the message there is you've got to have the offering out there and you hope the people will come.
Oh, good.
Megan Keating, congratulations on that. That's absolutely fabulous. And thanks for chatting today. Megan's the president of the Rochester Basketball Association. Just a text that I wanted to address. It says, the problem here, Nick and Rochelle, is you are looking through the lens of gender rather than the reality of finance. Sport clubs fund resources for players based on the revenues they raise. There's no logic to women getting first class seats if their sport doesn't raise the funds. I think what you're missing in this, dear texter, is that the amount of investment that's gone into men's sport versus the amount of investment in a women's sport to raise it to that level in the first place. It didn't exist in a vacuum. It didn't become popular in a vacuum. Huge amounts of money was put into it that were not put into women's sport. That's what we talk about when we say there's a gender divide.
There will be no Caitlin Clark effect. Every Olympic year sees an increase in participation of every sport televised. I don't know. I think there might be a Caitlin Clark effect. Absolutely, and we're already hearing from our experts today that they're already feeling it. This Matilda's soccer and AFL are cheap to go and see. Basketball and netball is expensive to watch. Netball is way overpriced and can't afford to keep going and watching. That I find fascinating, right? It shouldn't be expensive to go. Like, if you want to get bums on seats, make it affordable, make it free, do whatever it is you have to do in order to get people watching. Like, it shouldn't be cheaper to see one versus the other.
No, it shouldn't. And we want people to get in there. We want to get that buzz. We want to get that excitement. Ticket pricing is something that may actually be a huge element of that, yeah?
Christy Collier-Hill is the head of the WNBL. And Christy, when we're talking about whether or not we'll have a Caitlin Clark impact and effect here, what are you feeling? Is it all just being overblown, do you think, and we're actually not going to see a blip on our radar here in Victoria at all?
Well, hi, guys. Thank you for having me on. Interesting to hear the conversations you were just having there as well. No, we'll absolutely see a flow-on effect. The interest in women's basketball is right now unprecedented, and that's not to take anything away from the people that have all gone before and paved the way for women's basketball. There's a lot to be said for those trailblazers. But the effect is phenomenal. You've only got to look at the NCAA, which is the women's college basketball, the grand final that was played over there recently, peaked at 24 million viewers. And then the WNBA draft, which was last week, had 2.5 million people watching it. And in that WNBA draft, they draft in total 36 athletes. Three of those are Australians. One of them went in the first round. That one athlete happens to be a Victorian athlete in Nadia Poch as well. So the Caitlin Clark effect will create interest and awareness, and people are talking about it and looking it up and wanting to know about it more than ever before. And then the flow on for us in Australia, and then obviously in Victoria as well, is the connection we have to that Caitlin Clark effect. Our athletes that'll play in the WNBA, she'll play with an Australian at the Indiana Fever in Christy Wallace this season. So already there'll be people watching Caitlin Clark and then going, oh, who's Christy Wallace? And she's an Australian athlete in an Australian Opal. So it's a very, very exciting time for women's basketball in general.
Christy, does interest in the sport, and I get that it's exciting, we want to see more people playing it, but does that interest in the sport, does people looking it up, does that equate to eyeballs on a screen, to bums on a seat? Do we see that locally, impact in terms of locally?
I think in some parts it does. I mean, I heard you talk about the Matildas effect as well, and we've seen record crowds in the A-League, in the netball that's just started. We had our highest ever crowd figures in the 44-year history of the WNBL this last season. So it does equate to bums on seats to a degree. But what I would say is we've still got a long way for it to go to equate in bridging the inequality gaps that exist for women in sport. So I heard you talk before about the investment. That is absolutely the word. The investment in men's sport has always been there, and that's why it's so successful. The investment in women's sport is yet to come, and we've all got a part to play in that. Investment can mean anything from a big commercial sponsorship to buying a ticket to going to a game. So everybody has a part to play in helping women's sport get to where it rightly deserves to be, but in fairness, we are still a long way off that. These types of moments in time help significantly, but it's still
you've got to harness them and find a way to make it work, don't you? Do you agree with the text, Christy, that it's too expensive to go and see local basketball? Would you agree with that? Like, what's an average ticket cost?
I don't agree with that at all. I'm not sure where that has kind of come from, and I can't really speak for netball, but I know, for example, the Southside Flyers that won the WNBL Grand Final this season that just recently finished, their children's tickets were $5 throughout the season. So you can't get much cheaper than that other than being free. So no, and our ticket prices across the entire league, certainly in the WNBL and the three teams that are in Victoria, are very affordable. And our target is families. We pride ourselves on being a family friendly event and environment. So that pricing is in that market as well.
Christy, I'm aware I might be about to open a can of worms very, very late before we end it here. But a bit earlier in the program, we heard from Dr. Hunter Furjak, who said that when we looked at AFL and AFLW, linking those kind of teams and programs and names and supporters together had been really effective, saying that that was perhaps a divided supporter base when it came to basketball, women's and men's in this country. Where do you take that idea?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? So AFLW is not that old in terms of the league itself, and partnering with the men's program has certainly worked for them incredibly, incredibly well. There is no doubt about that. The WNBL, as I mentioned earlier, has been around for 44 years, and the history of that league and the history of the clubs that are in it are significant. We are actually seeing some joining up of leagues. So the Sydney Flames and the Sydney Kings are owned by the same ownership group, and seeing some, great outcomes from that kind of joint space there. It may happen in the future that you'll see more NBL and WNBL clubs align or come under the same ownership structure, but as it currently stands, all of the teams in Australia are individually owned. So it is a bit more of a challenging space to create an option like that. And then, it's a long argument about whether that is the right option or not.
Yeah,
but it's a challenging one.
I see the grenade that you've just thrown in at the end of the show here. Nick, I'm sensing there's another conversation in this. Just finally, Christy, while we've got you, because we're running out of time, but sure. Do you think now, because of Caitlin Clark, we will see more local women and men, for example, see their pathway into professionalism in the States and playing college sport?
I think so, absolutely. It just shines a light on that college pathway. And certainly we have a lot of athletes from Australia that go over there. I think on any given year, it's around 400 athletes playing in the college system, Australian athletes. So it definitely is a pathway, and it's a pathway to the WNBA. But in saying that, two of our athletes drafted last week, playing in the WNBL. So that's also a very valid pathway. And I've got to throw that in there.
Absolutely, you do. No, because I would think that would be the negative Caitlin Clark effect,
yes.
Is if we saw people go, well, I'm going to do what she does because there's not the opportunities here locally. So I think it's important to discuss, because then what we can do is highlight the opportunities that are here. Christy, thank you so much. It's been wonderful speaking with you. I dare say we'll speak with you again in the future. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks, guys.
Christy Collier-Hill there, who's the head of the WNBL. I knew today would be interesting, Nick Healy, and it so is.
I've been absolutely fascinated. And, I've been surprised at a few people saying they don't think they'll see a Caitlin Clark effect on the text line. I think overwhelmingly what we're hearing from the people on the ground, yeah, we will. In fact, we already are.
And a huge shout out to the rec centre in the Latrobe Valley in Newborough. I've just had a little
potholes
trip down nostalgia lane today, and I am mentally there in that rec centre. I can hear the shoes squeaking on the courts. I am eating a sausage roll and I am in a happy place. Nick Healy, as always, mate, thank you. Don't forget, the Conversation Hour is also a podcast. We do a lot of sport. We do a lot of women's in sport, everything from uniforms, the Matildas effect, netball, you name it. So jump on the ABC Listen app or throw Conversation Hour and Sport into your search engine and you'll find a show. Chat soon.